from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, in this morning's opening hour, more than 400 people were arrested in clashes with police after a City Hall march and rally Saturday by Occupy Oakland. On Sunday, Mayor Gene Kwan decried the damage and said the demonstrations have cost the budget-strapped city more than $5 million. Meanwhile, protesters criticized police conduct, saying that the arrests were illegal and that the Oakland Police Department gave them no option to disperse. We'll discuss the weekend's developments next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. In this opening hour of Forum, we want to get an update and comment and analysis of the first clashes since November of Occupy Oakland and the police, which occurred over this past weekend and culminated in some 400 arrests. And we begin with Christy Benedetti, who is a reporter for the Oakland Tribune and who is there. And Chris, thank you. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, good to have you. I guess one way to begin is by finding out what you observed. But as a reporter, I'm curious to get your sense of, well, let me frame it this way. We've been getting obviously conflicting reports. The police talking about unlawful assembly, violence, blocking traffic, things thrown at them and so forth. And from the other side, the Occupy protesters talking about being brutalized and police overreacting, using rubber bullets and tear gas. What did you see on each side?
Well, I think you saw a little bit of both, but I think this one was different than the other protests and the other incidents that we've had since October, in the sense that in past protests and past marches, you had mostly peaceful events throughout the day, and then when it turned bad, it usually turned bad late at night when things went dark and some of the more organized protesters had gone home. This one was tense from the beginning, and there was violent clashes from the beginning. I think the first one happened at about 3:30 p.m. near the Oakland Museum of California on Oak Street. That was shortly after 3 p.m. where protesters were throwing bottles and objects at police, and police responded with at least some smoke canisters. Some protesters said tear gas canisters. And it sort of got off to a bad start from the very beginning. And in addition to the high number of arrests, that's what made it most unique from other marches.
And what do we know about how many of these arrests were actually of Oakland residents? I mean, there's always that talk about outside agitators. It goes way back. But Mayor Kwan said that a number of those arrested initially had come by BART, and there's an attempt to get a lot of people into Oakland from other places.
Well, we're still sifting through the hard facts of that, but I think the first person I spoke with at the protest was a 19-year-old from Marin County. That was the first person I spoke with, and a few others sort of where I got their cities and their hometowns kind of fit that model where they weren't from Oakland. I think that there's a fair number of them that are from Oakland, but if past arrest statistics are reflective of this one, the majority in the past have been from out of town.
And when you talk to protesters, you get a sense that there's a kind of division between those who are there for idealistic reasons and see themselves allied with the occupied movement in general and those who are maybe just looking for some kind of confrontation or maybe even anarchic activity?
I think that's been the schism from the beginning. You know, you have, I think the majority still are really well-intentioned people who see, you know, nonviolent protests as the way to go. I think what has happened in the past since Occupy first arrived in Oakland in October and what certainly happened in larger numbers on Saturday is there is a number of protesters that resort to violence too quickly. And what I've been seeing online and from the emails I've received from people that otherwise would be sympathetic to the Occupy movement is that the Occupy movement in Oakland, at least, is in danger of losing grassroots support in its hometown. And within that, there's a weird dichotomy that's emerged, and that is that all throughout the country, there were support rallies and protests sort of organized on the fly within 24 hours of Saturday's arrest, Saturday's incidents. My colleague Sean Maher did a great job of covering that and noting that in today's Oakland Tribune. You know, there were protests in New York, Philadelphia, Denver, Los Angeles, all in support of what happened in Oakland, what they saw online. But while Occupy Oakland seems to be sort of like the cleanup hitter of the Occupy movement, and they inspire these their colleagues around the country, at home, the dichotomy is they seem to be losing more and more support from people who would otherwise support them, and that's certainly reflective of what I'm seeing in on you know the blogs and online emails I'm getting.
Did you see what you would characterize as police overreaction, or what degree did you see police overreacting?
You know, I was there for about 4 hours. I missed a lot of the stuff at City Hall because I was elsewhere around town covering it. But what I saw was I think nothing unique as to what's gone on before from police at other protests. But what I did see this time was more. A more sort of belligerence from the protesters than other times, which I think hurts their ability to garner sympathy from the public at large. What I saw was, I think the biggest event that I saw was at 5 o'clock after resting for a little bit at Ogawa Plaza. The occupiers announced that they were going to try and take over a second building. And they marched down 16th, and they stopped at the Traveler's Aid building on 16th Street near Ogawa Plaza, which was kind of the source of the biggest violence on November 2nd during the general strike. But they stopped briefly there and then kept going. And as soon as someone set off a fire hydrant and unleashed all this water onto 16th near Ogawa Plaza, the police, it was remarkable how quickly they showed up in riot gear, and they immediately started moving people back down San Pablo, north on San Pablo. And to make a long story short, they herded the protesters into the empty field between the Uptown Apartments and the Fox Theater. Police then fired, I believe it was a smoke canister. If it had been a tear gas canister, I think, you know, our eyes would still be burning. But it was a smoke canister, and to escape it, the occupiers, the protesters, knocked down a newly erected fence that separated Telegraph Avenue from the field. They spilled out onto Telegraph Avenue and then marched down Telegraph. And they were followed very, very slowly by Pleasanton Police Department patrol cars who were part of the mutual aid that showed up. It appeared that was going to be it for the night. But shortly thereafter, police sort of cornered the protesters at the YMCA, which I don't think was a targeted site. I think that's just sort of where they got cornered. And some tried to hide inside the YMCA. Some of the protesters did. And that's where the bulk of the arrests took place. There were hundreds arrested there.
Christy Benedetti, again, is a reporter for the Oakland Tribune. He's with us from Oakland. And, Chris, appreciate very much you joining us this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're going to have a number of other people joining us, including you. If you were there, that is, if you observed what happened, either as a protester or as a police officer or as a resident, we'd like to hear from you. And in fact, let me open the phone lines. And the big question for the rest of you, or for all of you for that matter, who observed or didn't observe, is just how sympathetic is the public at large, to quote Chris Benedetti? How sympathetic are you in an ongoing sense to the Occupy movement, particularly given the fact that they broke into City Hall and stole an American flag, set it on fire? This is the sort of thing that often enrages people who have a great deal of symbolic investment in the American flag, but also because of the violence on the one hand, but on the other hand, the sense that they've been arguing that there's no place for them to meet, no place to serve food or provide a place for people to stay. Let me open the phone lines and invite your thoughts. And again, those of you who can bear witness, please join us. Our toll-free number is available to you, and you can join us now at 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls. We also welcome your emails. Our email address is forum@kqed.org. And you can also communicate with us your thoughts or any comments you might have by going to our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on the segment, and you can do the same by going to our Facebook page. And we do, of course, welcome your involvement. We're going to go to a caller, in fact, and that's an Oakland caller. Max, join us. You're on. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing? My comment on what I saw that night basically is I think I saw a PR war failure by both Occupy Oakland and by the Oakland police. The kettling that Mr. Benedetti described, he missed a couple of things. For instance, on Telegraph, there was tear gas. also he was correct, the protesters didn't have any exit. There was also an incident where protesters charged at OPD with a shield. And I don't know if they did that out of panic because they were not, but it did happen. And
I think we've got a lousy connection here, so let me actually ask Mayor Kwan about that. We have her on the line. Jean Kwan, welcome
to
the program.
Hi, I'm sorry, I just came on the line, and I heard your intro. You know, we were at the Emergency Operating Center. We could hear the both the orders to disperse three or four times. And I have to tell you, if you watch the Twitter feed, what people are now saying is really disingenuous. It was very clear from the call from this weekend. They told people, don't come if you're going to interfere and try to make peace between the police and us. We're going to do an illegal action. Don't come if you're not willing to do an illegal action. I think it was very confusing for people who may have joined the demonstration sort of in the mid or just downtown and joined it. But the people who organized this, if you just follow their own Twitter feeds, their own organizing statements, they made it very, very clear that they planned to take over a building and that they weren't just wandering through downtown Oakland. They declared that they were going to take a second building. And so when they rushed into the YMCA, what were the police to think other than that they were taking that building? Clearly, it forced the Y to close and created a panic among the people using the Y. So I think it's just totally disingenuous, all the things that I've heard from the demonstrators since then.
What about what we've heard from you? I mean, you've said that this was a temper tantrum, and this has even been called domestic terror.
Not by me recently. Let me just say, this is Occupy Oakland was once a very large movement. If you've been watching our neighborhood listservs or even the debates, there are people who were involved, who've been doing peaceful things, who've been focusing on the banks, have been focusing on the legislation to tax the oil companies or tax the wealthiest 1% in the state. They are increasingly disavowing themselves from this group. If you watched who came, more and more, these demonstrations, or they shouldn't call themselves Occupy Oakland, they're from all over the Bay Area. Very few of the people that we arrested were from Oakland yesterday. And they congregate here. I mean, Oakland is centrally located in the Bay Area, for good or for bad. You know, we have a lot of art and cultural events. And increasingly, the demonstrators that we're arresting are not from Oakland and don't have any respect for our community. And they seem to trying to maximize the disruption of our own community events. I was in Chinatown, and they marched for the Lunar New Year Festival twice last Saturday.
Let me get a response from you, Mayor Kwan. This is somebody who sent us this web comment. Writes, let me guess, Mayor Kwan is going to commend the police and try to place the cost of this policing on Oakland Occupied. How much does that helicopter that flies overhead every Saturday night for hours cost? What possible purpose does it serve other than being a show of force? How many children lose sleep because of the stressful noise? Life during wartime, I guess. Oakland has paid out $58 million in police settlements the court had in the last 10 years. San Jose paid out $8 million in the same period, for perspective. The OPD abuses overtime rules so bad that the federal government had to step in. Kwan's rhetoric is tired by now. She really should have spent her time cleaning up the OPD rather than Oscar Grant Plaza.
Actually, you know, I have spent a huge amount of time with the federal, what we call the negotiated settlement agreement. You know, the long history, no one will deny that there's been a long history of issues within the Oakland Police Department, but nobody can say that every police officer has also been involved. There's got to be a balance here. The judge this fall, I got a lot of criticism from certain people when Deanna Santana and I stepped in to personally become involved in the reforms that we need to make in the Oakland Police Department. But, you know, people can't continue to use the fact that we have problems with some officers, that I think some mistakes were made on October 25th. It's why I hired an independent investigator, why I've asked the federal monitor to also to do some independent looks at that. They can't blame a few incidents and then say it's okay to constantly come and that anything that happens to them. I mean, if you watch the videotapes, and not just the clips that they're putting in on their website across the country, you see them throwing, God, flares, bottles, et cetera, and at the police line at that start. started the day off at the Henry J. Kaiser Center. For them to do that and bait the police, constantly provoke them again and again and again, and then to say that the police are being violent when they've also been violent. And I think the media has to sort of more fairly report this. I mean, I am sympathetic with the aims of the Occupy movement, but this is a splinter group. I don't think they represent the majority of people in Oakland who've been involved in the Occupy movement. And quite frankly, they're not even mostly from Oakland at this point.
Mayor Kwan, we appreciate your being with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Mayor Gene Kwan, Mayor of Oakland. I want to bring Mark Mason onto this, who's a member of Occupy Oakland Media Working Group. Mark Mason, thank you for joining us. Good morning to you.
Yeah, my pleasure. I am speaking for myself today as an individual, but I am a participant in Occupy Oakland. I'm on the media committee and also on the research committee. I'd like to initially like to say that, quite frankly, this is just an ideological attack. This entire program is an ideological attack on the Occupy movement and against poor people, not only the Oakland, but really the entire planet. This is what the 1% does. I want to say...
Then why are we giving you a voice if this is an attack on the movement?
Yeah, exactly. But so you spend, what is it now, we're at 20 minutes into the show attacking and using such a... attacks as the great ploy, the dangerous outsider ploy. And by the way, I don't live in Oakland. And how, will you spend 20 minutes asking how many police officers live in Oakland? Less than 10% of Oakland police officers live in Oakland. Did the press ask that? Did you ask that? No. Let's spend 20 minutes talking about how the police are dangerous state thugs. Only 7% of them live in the city of Oakland, and they attacked peaceful protesters on Saturday afternoon. That was a coordinated state attack on peaceful protesters.
Forgive me, but from the perspective of what the media is reporting, and we'll put that... Let me frame it that way. What the media is reporting, what has been reported by reporters like Mark DiBenedetti and others who... I don't necessarily think have any dog in this fight, is that bottles were thrown, pipes were thrown, rocks were thrown, spray cans were thrown. In fact, at the Oakland Museum, a bicycle was thrown. This is not necessarily conducive to what anybody would call peaceful protest or civil disobedience.
I was there. I was on the street. I know what happened. I was.
And you're saying none of that happened? This was all misreported by the media because they're part of the 1%?
I'm saying that the state of California cut $100 million from the budget for disabled citizens. That is state violence. Okay, I was standing there on Oak Street. I was there. I saw plastic water bottles thrown. So that's correct. If someone says bottles were thrown, I indeed saw plastic water bottles thrown. So I also saw the police throw flashbang grenades, and I am still suffering from massive headaches from the flashbang grenades. So if you want to compare plastic bottles to the state violence, we can do that. But I would also like to talk about state violence that you don't talk about. The violence that the state of California, when they cut $100 million from support for people in wheelchairs, the blind, and other developmentally disabled people, that also is state violence. So what I would like is for the press to use equal time. We'll talk 20 minutes about plastic bottles thrown, and then let's talk about 20 minutes how only 7% of the Oakland Police Department live in Oakland, and that the state cut $100 million from the budget for people who are in wheelchairs.
I'm glad you had an opportunity to speak here, and I thank you for joining us. Appreciate your being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Let me go to some more of your calls here. We'll get Shanna on from Oakland. Shanna, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. My husband and I were actually at the YMCA Saturday night doing a little date night kind of thing. We got trapped in the middle of it. Our car was locked up for the evening. When I came out of the locker room, they had about, I'd say, 20 people in the lobby handcuffed on the floor. I just wanted to make the comment that I did support the movement at one point, but actually seeing these people and the way that they were reacting and, you know, treating the officers, blowing marijuana in their face, I didn't believe that was what the movement was about. And we had our car, we had to come back the next day. The streets, they were already starting to clean. Just, This is not what this is about. If you want to represent the 99% of the people, then you act appropriately, like 99% of the people should act. You have to have a standard when you believe in something.
All right, Chana, I appreciate hearing from you. We're going to go to more of your calls shortly and forthwith, but I want to go first to Nancy Nadell, who is an Oakland City Council person, council member. She represents District 3. And Councilwoman, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, I just want to get you on record because you were perhaps one of the strongest supporters on the Oakland City Council where the Occupy movement was concerned, at least at first, and now you've done somewhat of a turnaround. Explain what's happened.
Well, yes, I was an original supporter. My first wince came from the naming of the municipal movements that sprung up after the cities they were in, instead of keeping the focus on Wall Street and the greed of the 1%. I think that was the beginning of the blurred focus, and I think that just listening to the broadcast so far this morning, we've spent so much time on skirmish details instead of the big issues. The last caller from Occupy mentioned some of them, but at the same time, he's getting involved in the skirmish instead of focusing and building a movement to demand justice from Wall Street, to tax the 1%, 1%, and to create some policy that prevents greed that's somehow disguised as success and has created such a twist in our culture that sees accumulation and hoarding of money as success instead of sharing and living in a civil society.
So forgive me, instead of those original ideals which you found yourself in alliance with and empathetic toward, what you're saying is it's turned into maybe just us against them, where the police are concerned and the protesters?
Exactly. I think any successful movement should be working towards encouraging the police to change their behavior, not taunting them into consistent bad behavior, just like the people who are taunting them. I'm a physicist by training, and you can see where that goes. Nowhere. It goes into people fighting against each other, and the 1% are laughing on the way to the bank. So I think that we absolutely must focus on demanding justice from Wall Street, working to tax the 1%, 1%, and creating policy to prevent greed in the future.
Wall Street's a long way from Oakland. I mean, many are feeling, why all this on Oakland?
Not when you see 10,000 houses.
No, I'm just talking about geographically, but you've got you've got not that much 1% represented in Oakland as you do, let's say, in so many other places here in the Bay Area, as opposed to Oakland, for example. I mean, you've been cut pretty thin in police resources. They couldn't go out and answer calls. There were five homicides over the weekend.
Yeah. I think it's ironic that people from Marin are coming to Oakland instead of dealing with some of the extraordinary wealth in Marin, where there's probably a lot more folks closer to 1% there than Oakland. We are a very poor city. Our resources are very, very thin. Right now I should be focusing on the latest crisis in our budget of trying to find $28 million to cut more because the state is taking our resources. So it's not the place to stretch resources and taunt an already stressed and trying to change police force. It's the place where we should all be joining together to demand justice from Wall Street, work on taxing the 1%, 1%, and creating policy to prevent greed in the future.
Nancy Nadell, thank you for joining us. Appreciate your being with us on Forum. And Nancy Nadell, again, is Oakland City Council member for District 3. When we return, we'll hear from more of you. Just a little sampling of some web comments here. If the Occupy movement really cared about our community, they wouldn't waste our community's money by attacking City Hall or the YMCA. We could be using all that money to help people here in Oakland. Or how amazing it is to see the media and some officials use the same language as Assad in Syria is using, or Gaddafi in Libya used, to accuse the people of Occupy of not being from Oakland is an insult to the spirit of revolt in America. True violence is the mayhem brought upon the people by ruthless bankers and politicians. We must focus on the behemoth, the Great Recession, not on the marginalia of police versus protesters. More when we return on Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. More than 400 people were arrested in clashes with police after a City Hall march and rally Saturday by Occupy Oakland. On Sunday, Mayor Gene Kwan decried the damage and said the demonstrators have cost the budget-strapped city more than $5 million. And meanwhile, protesters criticized police conduct, saying that the arrests were illegal and that the Oakland Police Department gave them no option to disperse. We're discussing the weekend's developments. We talked first with Christy Benedetti, a reporter for the Oakland Tribune. We also spoke with Mayor Gene Kwan and Nancy Nadella, the Oakland City Council, and we spoke with Mark Mason, a member of Occupy Oakland's Media Working Group. I want to also bring Spencer Mills into this, also known as Okfo Show, a citizen journalist. He's been live streaming Occupy protests from across the Bay Area and has attracted a global following, has indeed gone quite viral. And Spencer Mills, good to have you on Forum. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like actually for you to respond first, since you were there with your trusty smartphone and got so much of this on video, to a statement by Police Chief Howard Jordan.
These marches have become more aggressive, more confrontational, more direct action of violence towards the police, towards buildings. And as a result of that, we have to change our tactics in terms of being able to preserve life and property.
Now, how does that square with what you saw?
Well, the marches have been a direct result of police conduct, whether it be the original raid that happened on Occupy Oakland or the resulting raids that have happened on Occupy Oakland. Everything that Occupy Oakland has done, from the general strike, the second port shutdown, to now these Saturday FTP marches, have all been a direct result of what OPD has done, their tactics, how they've arrested people on what many people feel are trumped up charges, and then those charges are eventually dropped. I mean, there's a whole lot of reasons that these things have happened, you know, number one being the conduct of the Oakland Police Department and how they have handled Occupy Oakland. I think the fact that they're coming closer and closer to federal receivership and what Judge Felton Henderson has said is just, I mean, it's further proof of the fact that they have mishandled the situation from the start, including Gene Kwan and the city council.
Would you agree with, the protesters who spoke out on this, who said... Or let me put it another way. The way it was essentially stated by many of the protesters was there was no option of leaving or instructions on how to leave.
Okay, so earlier in the day they had given dispersal notices. Earlier in the day. There was also a time when the police cornered the march at 19th and Telegraph. During that time, they also used tear gas. There was a supposed dispersal order given there, though if you look back on my video, you never hear one. There were, at which point in time, the march escaped the 19th and Telegraph blockade, I would call it, by police, by pushing over a fence and getting out on the Telegraph. From there, the march went down to where it was eventually kettled on Broadway outside of the YMCA. Now, once the march was stopped outside of the YMCA, no dispersal order was given. It was stopped. They hemmed in the march, and then they started giving them a mass arrest notice, saying everybody here has been given the chance to disperse, and now you're all under arrest. But once the march was stopped in front of the YMCA, there was no dispersal order given, not even one. And I have heard from some people that it's actually against policy it's not. Their policy to use dispersal orders from earlier in the day for an ongoing event.
No, there's already talk about the arrest being illegal and the possibility of a class action lawsuit. We actually heard earlier from Mark Mason, a member of Occupy Oakland, who was talking about the fact that the media seems biased in not reporting that you have a lot of police officers who don't necessarily come from Oakland. And for that matter, some of the police were called in from areas outside of Oakland. Nevertheless, there's been a good deal of talk about those protesters who were meeting violence with violence. If it was police violence, as you said, there was violence used against the police this time, and some of it orchestrated.
Well, so if you're referring to, I personally did not see anything happen between, as far as an exchange between police and protesters outside of the YMCA. Earlier in the day, there was an exchange at 10th and Oak Street, where OPD, of course, used smoke bombs, tear gas, beanbags, rubber bullets, things like that, and some things were thrown from protester lines as well. That is fair. But again, OPD chose to confront the march. OPD chose to basically stop the march and attempt to kettle it or push it in a certain direction. And I don't think that confrontation or that violence would have happened had OPD not chosen the time and the place for it to happen.
Spencer Mills, again, known as Okfo Show, citizen journalist. He's been live streaming Occupy protests from across the Bay Area and has attracted quite a following, a global following. Thank you for joining us, Spencer Mills.
Thank you for having me.
And let me read some more comments before we go to more of your calls. Here's Red from Oakland, who says, calling the people who had their temper tantrum at City Hall violent anarchists is giving them too much credit. Messing up a building lobby reminds me of my two-year-old's approach to anger management. It's simply pathetic and cowardly and just mars the legitimate concerns of the Occupy movement. Another listener writes, only a fool would look at the fascistic police conduct in Oakland and the response of protesters and not see a strong similarity to Tahrir Square. Only an ignorant fool would fail to notice that our democracy has been hijacked by corporatist thugs who, whether they plan their schemes at Bilderberg or Davos, are as much opposed to genuine freedom and democracy as the Nazis were, even while they promote sham democracies by their lackeys. And another web comment. Last week, KQED-TV's Check Please program profiled a church-run restaurant in one of Oakland's less fashionable neighborhoods that serves delicious soul food while training and employing ex-convicts who are trying to rebuild their lives. I mention this because it's an excellent example of a grassroots community organization that is doing something quite meaningful for Oakland's 99%, and it stands in sharp contrast to the self-indulgent Occupy Oakland protesters who are obviously enthralled with violence and have absolutely nothing to offer except mindless vandalism and mayhem. Another web comment writes, why is it that Oakland is always the one that seems to revert to violence? Don't they realize it's just hurting local people? And Bill writes, I have great concern regarding the recent use of the term domestic terrorists as used to describe the protesters in the recent Oakland actions. Just prior to the start of this morning's program, the term improvised explosive device was used. Given the passage of the NDAA, I am concerned that OWS will be deemed terrorists by loose-lipped politicians and police officials. I do agree with many aspects of the OWS movement. I subject to indefinite detention as a sympathizer, as outlined in this horrible law. The public officials must be careful about what they say, please. And we'll go to another caller, and that's Tim from Oakland. You're on.
Tim or Ken?
Tim.
Okay. Well, no, my name is Ken, and I am an Oakland resident. I wasn't there. I initially supported the premise of economic equality and the Occupy Wall Street and the Oakland people. I went on peace marches and civil rights marches and was in jail for in the draft. Occupy Oakland, in my opinion, has lost their focus. I'm sure there are a lot of people that are very well-intentioned, but the main focus that we're seeing, I think, has lost support. I'm not the 1%. I am middle class. I feel the police are protecting me. I go to that. Why? I'll be there tomorrow night. I would hate to have a bunch of people come in and basically riot in the lobby of my YMCA, but I think the police are protecting me, and the Occupy people have totally lost a sort of one-direction focus of economic equality, and they're trashing my city and bankrupting my city. And I say to the fellow who said that these marches are a direct result of the OPD, I'm just saying, what? Where did that come from? That the police didn't start this, and I'm very, very unhappy with the movement I initially supported.
All right. We thank you for your comment and your call, and sorry we got your name wrong. Don Link is joining us now, past chair of the Oakland Community Policing Advisory Board. Don Link, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
I'd like to get you on record about really what we've heard before, that there was no option of leaving, no instructions on how to leave, that these arrests were, many of them, illegal.
Well, I was not present to actually witness it, so I base what I know about this on what I've seen in the press reports and some of the direct reports that we've heard. The arrests were made when the attempt was to get into the old Kaiser Convention Center, and fences were torn down, things were thrown. That set the whole thing in motion. Once the protesters decided to use violence and to occupy private property, and they call it public, but in this case it was property that they shouldn't have been going into, the police were pretty much forced to respond, and particularly when they had things thrown at them. As far as the protesters not having a way to get out of these enclosures by the police, that's a tactic that I think has been used in every demonstration I've ever seen, going back to the 60s when I was on the UC campus and the anti-war protests and demonstrations. The police were outnumbered, and it's always the case that they're going to be outnumbered in these demonstrations. And knowing police and having worked with them, I find that there's a lot of adrenaline going on both sides. And as soon as things start coming at them, the police are going to respond. The protesters knew this. That's why they warned people that didn't want to be participating in violence not to participate in that event on Saturday.
Talk, if you would, Mr. Link, about the use of police resources here. There's been from certainly public officials. We heard from Nancy Nadell, and we also heard from Mayor Kwan. Great concern about the cost and about police resources being so spread out as a result of this that important calls in many instances have to be ignored. Homicides have to be ignored. What do you see?
Well, it's absolutely true. If we start with a very small police force to begin with, one that does not have enough manpower, so that the patrol function is difficult at best every day. And then when you pull these resources into responding to the threats of violence and the actual violence, you don't have the resources to respond to calls. I know our community policing officer in the Shattuck Corridor in North Oakland has spent a lot of his time, most of his time, dealing with Occupy over the last several months, and he had to tell us, I haven't been in the beat. We've been downtown. That does hurt the neighborhoods, and what it's doing is it's depriving police services, the normal police services for response, from law-abiding citizens throughout the city. It's not fair, and one of the things that bothers me most about the turn in Occupy is that it's become inhumane. The tactics of violence are inhumane on the, you know, on the surface and in reality. And as soon as demonstrations take that turn, they lose my support. It's possible to be nonviolent and to be very effective. Martin Luther King and his protesters showed that. Gandhi, those are in the best spirit of demonstrations. And I think 99% of Oakland agreed with Occupy in the beginning. And it's only when the violence became foremost that the citizens have a problem with the movement. It does look as if what Gene Kwan has said, they're using Oakland as a playground. They're using it to basically raise hell, damage things, destroy property. The pushing over that architectural model of City Hall was not only childish, but insulting to the city, insulting to the history of this city.
No, I'm loath to mention this, but there have been statements made that the Occupy movement is looking toward the possibility not only of occupying City Hall, but of blocking the airport, of closing down the Oakland port, and bringing in Anonymous to help in their cause. Don Link, I'm glad you joined us. Thank you. Don Link, again, is past chair of the Oakland Community Policing Advisory Board. He mentioned Gandhi. Here's Steve in Petaluma, who says, I'm a non-Oakland Occupy, 100% nonviolent Occupy participant. From an occupier's perspective, what is happening in Oakland is a crisis of the practice of nonviolent civil disobedience and a leaderless movement. Though the vast majority of Occupy protesters are nonviolent, it is very difficult to keep belligerent individuals out. What would Gandhi say to the Oakland protesters? There is no such leader here. Therein lies the rub. Rick joins us from El Cerrito. Rick, you're on. Good morning.
Hi, thank you. I'd first like to say that I also identify myself as a nonviolent person all the way. I've been at many of the Occupy Oakland marches. And it's unfortunate that the Occupy Oakland is really losing the PR battle right now. It's, you know, these words like, you know, using Oakland as a playground, that remark is insulting and demeaning to the protesters. And then also the continual repeating of trying to take over the YMCA is just ridiculous. I was there as an observer, and when we got kettled in, it's a scary feeling. It's fight or flight. And if the door is there and somebody opens it, you're going to try to escape. That's how people got into the YMCA. Nobody tried to take over the YMCA. That's just a ridiculous comment. But they keep repeating it.
All right. I appreciate your call and thank you for it. And we'll go right to another call. And that's William in Albany joining us. Good morning, William.
All right. Thank you. Yes. I don't consider myself a member of the Occupy movement, but I was there to see what goes on. because I heard that the reputation of the Oakland police was of brutality, and I'd heard that for years, and so I decided to see what actually happens at these. At first, I was toward the front, everything was peaceful. Nobody was trashing any property. Nobody was smashing windows or you know, I didn't see anything like that. Then I moved toward the back, I didn't see anything like that happening. You know, nobody was throwing anything at the police. And where I was, nobody was doing it. But at one point, the police, a large group of police rushed in and started beating people from the back. That kind of shocked me, because they weren't doing anything. There was nothing. I mean, this was late in the afternoon, and apparently the police had gotten riled up or something. But from my perspective, and as I say, I don't consider myself a member of the Occupy movement. I'm generally sympathetic toward the 99%. But from my perspective, the police, it was a police riot.
You saw police brutality. William, thank you for giving that eyewitness testimony to us. And let me go to some other listeners who were there. Here's Ian from Oakland, who says, as someone who was involved with the actions on Saturday and an Oakland resident, I can say that the police response to the Occupy movement was appalling. I personally experienced 4 instances of police kettling protesters with absolutely no way of dispersal, no chance of getting past the line, just being trapped until gassed. No protesters were violent. All violence was from the police. I witnessed police beating protesters who fell on the ground, police tearing bicycles from people's hands and using them against others. The media coverage of Saturday is unsurprisingly completely off and a complete misrepresentation of actual events. Carol from Millbrae says a serious misuse of police took place yesterday, Sunday, in Oakland. On either side of the area where there were peaceful demonstrators, murders took place. One, a 19-year-old male murdered a 15-year-old mother of his child. Two, a son murdered both of his parents. In each of these 2 cases, the news announced that witnesses phoned the police, but the news did not report that police arrived on site. Are group demonstrations more significant to the police than murders? Why? Scott writes, I live right in downtown, and I can honestly say I'm feeling terrorized by Occupy. I support the OPD's rights to containment, Occupy's violence against our neighborhood. A comment from the web. Occupy Oakland seems to be dominated by what I call the 6-year-old boy mind. They don't take in any information that is at odds with what they already think, and there's no mediating influence of maturity, wisdom, or broad perspective. They're stuck in this solipsistic cycle of antagonizing and provoking the police, getting arrested and protesting the arrests. It looks like totally self-aggrandizing behavior. They seem so thrilled with themselves when they do get arrested, they don't look at what effect they're having on anything. They occupied a house on our block, and when the police did finally come to evict them, there were Oakland occupiers waiting with video cameras who would be dying for the police to make some misstep. There are so many things that need to be addressed about financial inequality in our country right now. What a dumb waste of time, resources, and energy. Caller from Campbell, Seth, you're on. Good morning.
My question is this. I have heard on your program that there was a lot of support for Occupy Oakland in the beginning, and that support is really dwindling away. Who benefits from that? Who benefits from having these marches, protest marches? Who benefits when they go violent? Same thing during the Vietnam War, during the anti-war movement, and it was later discovered and revealed that there were actually government agents, professional saboteurs, who were throwing smoke bombs, Molotov cocktails, bottles, agitating, and taking otherwise peaceful and then, of course, that spreads.
So you think this is conspiratorial to essentially defuse the movement or to braid the movement?
To discredit the movement.
To discredit it, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And
do you have any proof of that kind of conspiracy with Occupy Oakland? You're right about Vietnam, by the way. But do you have any proof with Occupy Oakland?
No, I'm asking a question. Who benefits when a movement like this loses its credibility? Who benefits?
All right, fair question. We'll let it hang out there, and a lot of questions on hanging out there, continuing to obviously cover this. We will continue to cover it, and we will continue to get your feedback. In fact, you can continue this discussion on our website simply by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. I want to thank all of you who participated and called in, but we do have more time, and let's go to more calls. And we go to Herb next. Herb, you're on.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. You know, it's interesting because I watch this movement, and I think to myself, there's no, it's like a rudderless ship. There's no purpose. There's no direction. If these guys across the country said, we're going to go out and get 10 million people registered to vote, and we're going to change the direction of the country through the vote, then that's something. But today, to go into a city that has stressed resources into an organization and occupy a YMCA that's an organization that has a history of helping people and damaging it, destroying our city hall and costing our city $4 million, that's $4 million that can go into helping schools, children, families, communities, and they don't want to take any responsibility for that. If that came out of their paycheck, it would really make a dent in their lives. But to damage the city and to not take any responsibility for it and to have this rudderless ship that just costs the city money every week, I lose support for it myself. I think it's a great idea. I think it's a great to say, hey, let's get people to pay more and be more responsible to our nation. But hey, if all you're going to do is damage it, and then I think the movement should go away.
All right, Herb, I thank you for your call, and again, thanks to all our callers. We've been discussing Occupy Oakland. This is, however, a fundraising period on KQED Public Radio. For more information on how to support this radio station, visit kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And more of your calls. We go next to San Francisco caller, another Oakland caller. Susie, you're on. Hi.
Hi, I'm Susie Cagle. I'm a freelance journalist, and I and five other journalists were swept up and arrested during that kettle in front of the YMCA. And I can tell you that occupiers did not try to occupy the YMCA. Employees of the YMCA allowed people to get inside to escape the police kettle where there was no dispersal order given. And I was physically shoved back by several police officers, and then I was detained for 40 minutes in handcuffs while I was trying to do my job wearing police press credentials.
I think
it's important to note.
Thank you for that. I think, in fact, a reporter from KGO Radio was arrested who just showed her press pass, and they said, well, you're from San Francisco, you're not from Oakland, so they took her away. Let me get Jeff on next. Jeff, thanks for waiting. Join us, please.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call. I guess one point I'd like to make is it seems in the recent Occupy movement that one of the things that's being forgotten about kind of the philosophy of civil disobedience is you go and you challenge something through, action that breaks the law. But one of the central tenets is you accept the responsibilities of your action. This means that you peacefully go with the police when they arrest you. And I think that's a big issue is, nobody wants to get arrested, but part of this protest is bringing awareness. Part of civil disobedience is kind of accepting the consequences of your action.
All right, Jeff, I thank you for your call, and I'm going to go to some more of your comments. Here's a web comment that says, stop taking expert calls, expert in quotes, and comments from people who are not involved or able to observe the actual events on Saturday. Everything they say is hearsay and a total misrepresentation of what happened. This program is complicit in the ideological warfare being waged against the movement by police, government, and corporate media. Another web comment. It's clear that Mayor Kwan's leadership style is shrill and ineffectual, but conversely, Occupy Oakland has a real challenge focusing its message and tactics. Both Occupied Oakland and the Oakland Police know that aggression and violence is a tool that can be used to benefit their case, but Occupy Oakland has to maintain a nonviolent course if they wish to retain community support. Another listener writes, the gentleman from the movement who spoke reflects a lack of understanding of nonviolent protest, which was reflected in Saturday's action. The strength of nonviolence in a just cause is that, A, it usually won't trigger violent state response, and even if it does, B, it will, through its moral high ground, gain many more supporters. A misdirected group of mostly outsiders, rightfully angry at banks and perhaps the state legislature in Sacramento, creating havoc and expense in a very progressive city, are unlikely to succeed in either reducing police violence or gaining local support to swell the movement. And another listener writes on the web,
99% are not radical anarchists, and we have seen great social and legal change in this country by means of civil protests in a peaceful, nonviolent fashion. We go to Martinez. George, join us. You're on.
Yes, I was one of the people inside the YMCA, who was a patron, and I saw, you know, what had happened, and it was very chaotic. I mean, I think I'm a supporter of the idea of the movement, but, you know, when they started banging on the windows, and, you know, and I was in the pool, and there was other, you know, members and family members in the pool, and, you know, it was very scary, I think, for a lot of the children as well. And there was family members outside who were trying to get to their children, and I think coming into the Y, I think they created a problem for themselves, because, you know, the support that they had from the communities, you know, I think it's going to be diminished, and they're undermining their movement by entering into private residences, private complexes, and, you know, City Hall.
I also don't know who was responsible for the flag burning, but that also certainly doesn't help the movement, to put it mildly. I mean, there are many people who have relatives and friends and people that they've known, including, you know, parents who died in the war. And I can remember the flag burning going back to Vietnam. It arouses a great deal of rage in many people who respect the flag. I want to thank all of our listeners. We will, as I said, continue to monitor this and carefully follow it. We talked with Christy Benedetti of the Oakland Tribune earlier. We also talked with Mayor Gene Kwan and Oakland Councilwoman Nancy Nadel, with Mark Mason, a member of Occupy Oakland Media Working Group, and with Spencer Mills, a citizen journalist who has been live streaming Occupy protests, and with Don Link, past chair of the Oakland Community Policing Advisory Board. Thank you for your calls, your emails, and your web comments, and another hour of Forum is up ahead. In the hour ahead, we're going to find out all about Egypt from Stephen Cook of the Council on Foreign Relations. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our producers are Kevin Guillory and Judy Campbell. Our engineer is Howard Gelman, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. And for all of us at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Ferro, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.